thank everyone and all those who supported today's event. It really means a lot to us. And we are looking for sponsors for new events. You can decide the topic. Today's sponsor decided the topic, and you can either sponsor it anonymously, like person today, or you can also sponsor it not anonymously, so we all know who you are. Today, we are a group of singles, or most of us are single. And there are some people here you know, some people here you don't know. But what we do know is the magic is in the air. So if you want to put your name, and you can either put an A in front of your name, meaning that you're available, or an NA in front of your name, meaning that you're not available. If someone puts an NA in front of their name, I want you to make sure to honor them and don't contact them. But if they put an A, you can also put your age range, your religious orientation, and you never know. Before Purim, there's magic here right now, and you never know. And
Rabbi, you mean in front of their name, like the screen name? You want them to change
in front of your screen name. Just change your screen name. Where it says your name, put an A or an NA. And if you're putting an A, put your age range and your religious orientation. And that means someone can contact you. So you can go through the names of the people who are here. We have a wonderful group here, a large group here, and you never know if you can meet somebody here right now. And if you haven't made a profile yet, we have a wonderful site that you can make a profile on that is associated with us, jmatchmaking.com. And if you use marketing code Rabbi's Gift, that's one word, Rabbi's Gift, you get a free month of gold membership. Also, throughout tonight's class, you are welcome to privately chat us your questions, and we will be answering in about 40 minutes from now. We're going to be answering lots of your questions. So you can either submit them publicly in the chat or anonymously. That is the story for tonight. I now hand over the mic to the venerable matchmaker and dating coach, relationship coach, Lori Young.
Thank you, Rabbi. Did you want to leave this screen up for now?
We can leave it. We'll bring it back up in a minute.
Okay. Hi, everybody. Welcome to today's event. I'm honored, privileged to partner with two such amazing people to dating and coaching. And they've been creating amazing events together. And they have podcasts that I wait breathlessly for, as I'm sure most people in the singles world do. I share their podcasts, and you can go to matchmaker.org, write it down, and listen to all their words of wisdom. It's fun. It's insightful. I'd say half of my matchmaker training has been through the words of wisdom of Aliza Ben Shalom. She's just really mentored me, and that's why I'm so privileged to be able to present with them today. Like, this is really exciting for me. Whatever they want to present, we're all going to learn something. Aliza lives in Israel, and she is a very active matchmaker and dating coach. The rabbi is stuck in Montreal, Canada. I'm from Alaska, so I can relate. And he's made over 100 matches and officiates at lots of weddings. He already has 20 booked for this summer. He did over 30 last summer. He's like making matches and marrying them left and right. Aliza's made tons of matches and getting them together through her coaching, through her matchmaking. They're both absolutely dynamite people. So I'm going to hand it over to Aliza to get the program rolling.
Okay, amazing. Thank you, Lori, and welcome everybody. And a special hi, I see Ben, who we have a family connection here. So hi, Ben. And I'm very excited to be here with everybody. And sorry for everybody who's cold. If you like it cold, mazel tov, yay. And if you don't like it cold, come visit me in Israel, yay. Okay, Rabbi. I think the two of us are going to banter and do this topic together. Does that sound good?
That sounds great. Let's get started with something very interesting here. I'd like to talk to you about this thing. So this is a live mentee that we put together. And we asked you today, in one or two words, give us a reason that someone should reject a date. And the number one answer is, I do not know. We have a lot to talk about, Aliza. But we have other answers, like not trustworthy, not feeling it, right. Already dated them, catfish. I don't like catfish. It's not kosher. Not safe.
we don't like the dating catfish either. It's not nice.
Not safe or wholesome, not religious enough, dating others, rudeness, mean, dissimilar values, bad midot, bad character traits, zero attraction, financially unstable, irreconcilable differences, physically repulsive. Wow, that's a big word.
I'm really glad that this is here.
Gaps in perception. Aliza, what do you have to say about this? We're watching this live, people updating this. So you can just go to menti.com, go to 4915-9743, and you can see this. So let's talk about this a second.
Or you could check in the chat. The link is in the chat as well. Okay, so I want to talk about this, and I want to talk about what everything that you know and I know and how we organize and categorize it and what it all means, right? What we're talking about tonight is the five reasons that you definitely should reject a date. Now, if you're talking to a matchmaker, most matchmakers are going to be like, no, go out, give it another chance. Why? Because they made the suggestion because they believe in the match that they set up. They think there's potential for a reason. What's the reason? I don't know. It could be in one category or another category, but we need it to match in multiple categories. And the thing that was just on the screen, which we'll bring back not now, but later, you have lots of different categories there. I'm going to take a wild guess, Rabbi, and I'm going to say that I think that everything on there is going to be covered in the five reasons why I think you should reject a date. I think that we can do it. And at the end, we'll prove whether or not we did or didn't, but I'm pretty sure that every single one is going to be covered. But are you ready to go? Are you ready to get started?
Continue populating it so you can prove us wrong. Okay. What are the five?
Yeah.
Give us the five.
Yeah. Okay. I'm going to give you the five, but then we got to talk about it. You can't just go by the five and like, be like, okay, I got the five and now I'm checking out of here. Okay. You ready?
Right, exactly.
Personality.
Okay. Personality.
Well, values. Are you putting this up on the screen?
I am.
Oh, I love it. Okay. Personality, values, fears, bothers, looks.
Okay, let's go with personality.
Personality, Rabbi, you and I have a thing about personality. We're very much into what's called the Big Five, which is not just a personality analysis and woo, whoop-de-doo, what does it matter? Everybody has personality analysis. This is a scientifically proven personality analysis that shows you where you fall and also tells you that over time, how does personality change? Does it like, can you be like this today and tomorrow you're like this and the next day you're down and the next personality over time, you are pretty much the same human over time. We can evolve, we can change, we can shift, but you know, the tortoise is the slow one. Very slowly over time, do we change in the category of personality, which means that you either like a person's personality and yay, you're in. You don't like a person's personality and you're like, it's never going to change, or it will slightly, but I'm probably not going to like it. Or you could be somewhere in the middle where you're like, well, I don't love it, but I don't hate it. And it's neutral enough that maybe I could make it work. Awesome.
Personality can be divided into five different elements. We have number one, you can see on top right over here, introversion versus extroversion, antagonism versus agreeableness, lack of direction versus conscientiousness, emotional stability versus neuroticism, closeness to experience versus openness. Aliza, let's talk about just one of them. We can't talk about all of them right now, but let's pick one of them. Which one do you want to talk about?
Let's pick emotional stability and neuroticism, because I think that people misunderstand that one and they take it in a negative light. So I want to show the positive side.
Okay. So we automatically think that we're picking on our mothers. Right? Neuroticism. Picking on Jewish moms is terrible.
Okay. Why is it important? And neuroticism, can you give us a good definition for that? Can you explain it so we can get a better handle on this?
Sure. So neuroticism is going to be how emotional you are with regards to another person, how emotional you are in relationship with someone else. So What I love about the Big Five, and I'll put them back on the screen, is because according to Judaism, according to Jewish values, we are considered two halves of a whole. And if you look at these five things in their extremes, you will see there's two halves of a whole. Now, the couple, let's, for example, just for a moment, introversion versus extroversion. Let's say you have two extroverts. One of the two is going to take on the introverted role. You need to have an introvert in a relationship. You can't only have two extroverts in a relationship. So whoever is more extroverted will end up becoming the extrovert, and whoever's more introverted. And it could be they're both extroverts, but the one who's a little more introverted will take on the introverted role.
So I just want to say, because this part confused me when I first was learning it. I was like, aha, they're still extroverted, but they're the less out there extrovert, which means the extrovert who takes on the highest level, like between Rabbi and me, he is more extroverted than I am. I'm still extroverted, but when we're together, he takes on that role, which means I'm going to be more quiet, maybe a little bit more reserved. Am I reserved? I'm not reserved. Compared to him, I'm more reserved than he is. So even though I'm considered the introverted one, I'm the introverted one, but I'm extroverted. So it's confusing in that way. Does that help a little bit?
I don't know if that helps a little bit, because right now you seem like you're more extroverted than me. Right, you're taking.
That's only because I was talking for 1 minute. But in general, right, you step up to the plate when we know this because we know the Big Five, and so we both actually work to balance it out. So one of us can step up, and the other one can step down, and we can balance it so that we're not fighting for being that.
Well, I think that's important, because a couple will do that also. They will switch roles, which means two extroverted people sometimes they'll end up switching roles. So it's not black and white. Relationships aren't black and white. It's not cut and dry. There's going to be a fluidness in your relationship. But let's go into this idea of neuroticism.
Okay, wait, hold on. Somebody also said presumably two introverts, one will also be the extroverted one of the introvert. Absolutely. Yes, which is also very confusing, because you're like, no, but we're both introverted. Yes, but somebody will be the one to take the lead, to want to do more or go out more or be more available or present with people, and the other one will be more reserved.
That's right. So let's go into neuroticism for a second. Why do you want to focus on that one today?
Because it gets a bad rap. And the truth is, you can't have one without the other. We can't have black without white, light without dark, good without bad. There has to be both. So it can't be that one is good and one is bad. Both have to have something positive. And I want to show the positive side of neuroticism, because people hear that word and they're like, oh, I don't want to be, oh, I'm not the neurotic one. Who wants to be labeled that? It has a very negative connotation. So I would like to show the good side.
So what do you think the good side of neuroticism is? I think, first of all, I like to say that neuroticism is a very good thing, because relationships live on neuroticism. They live on that emotional. It's funny how the scientific word has become a negative word, but it's not negative. It's actually the emotional juice that lives and breathes a relationship.
Right. So the positive side is that without healthy fear, healthy anxiety, healthy concern, you won't know how to look out for yourself properly. Now, if there's too much of it, it's also out of balance. But without it at all, we wouldn't be balanced. We wouldn't be good. We wouldn't feel good. Things wouldn't work in our life as well. Even if you look in a business perspective, right? And we're evaluating a product, okay? And we're testing the safety, okay? No, it's all good. It's fine. What's the big deal? Ah, let it go. It's good, right? Crash it, burns. It's terrible, right? The neurotic person would be like, no, it's not going to work. And you're like, why? Why won't it work? Because, and then they'll give you the 10 reasons why they think it won't work. Now, maybe they're being overly neurotic and five of them are invalid, but they might have five really good reasons why this isn't going to work, which can then improve what's happening so that you can fix it before it fails.
What's another word that you would use for neurotic that wouldn't be so scary to some people here?
Oh, I need help from the audience.
Anyone have a word for neurotic? Because it seems like I'm listening to it and it doesn't land well for me. So if anyone has any other words that they would use for that.
So somebody said a famous example of a neurotic person is Woody Allen. That's a famous
extreme example. Extreme.
Carl Jung says neuroticism is our shadowy type. Accept it, not reject it. Careful. Very careful. Anxious, cautious.
Again, these are negative. Cautious, I like cautious.
Intense.
Intense, okay. That's good.
Yep.
Concerns.
Concerned.
Right. Like when your mother calls you from Florida while you're in Montreal and says, are you wearing a coat today?
Right?
Crazy love. That's interesting. Yes, crazy love, which means, see, that's what it is. What I like to touch on with this particular personality trait is that it really, really focuses on the relationship itself. Relationships thrive on that emotional feeling, on that emotional experience of conflicted or ambivalent. Mm-hmm. I like that. Mm-hmm.
I think the point is that there's a lot of things that it means to a lot of different people and a lot of different ways that we understand this. But the way that I want to have an understanding is that there is a good side to this as well, and not to look at any of these five categories with good versus bad. Can you pop the list up again? Because I want to go through it and I want to just point out that it's not good versus bad. It's different. Okay. So some people would say, you know, introversion versus extroversion. And some people might have a preference and say, oh, it's only good if you're one of these and not the other. But it's not true. Antagonism versus agreeableness. Okay. If everybody was agreeable, it wouldn't work either. It sounds like it would. The world would be great. Nobody would have any problems, but nothing would get fixed either. And nobody would be there to nudge or prod us to get us to grow. Exactly. Lack of direction versus conscientiousness. So sometimes you want to give over something with lack of direction, Rabbi? About
some of the people who were here early today, they're very conscientious. The people who are just walking in 25 minutes into the event, they've got a little more lack of direction.
Or they were busy with work.
Or they were busy with other things.
Right. And we did emotional stability and neuroticism. Closeness
to experience and openness to experience is the last one, right? So if someone is really conscientious and really, let's say, open to experience, they're probably going to want to see the Eiffel Tower, the Statue of Liberty, and the Western Wall in one day. And maybe they can work it through.
Virtually.
Exactly. Let's go back to our whiteboard. Values.
Okay. So that's personality. Values. Values are all of the things that I hold near and dear to me, my beliefs, the things that I want in my life with a partner. These are the things that I value. And what I value is not going to be what you value. And what I value is not going to be the same as anybody else in the world. And people can say, oh no, in general, everybody should value the same thing. We should all value a loyalty and loving and compassionate and generous and kind. And those are all nice values. And maybe some of them will be on your list. And maybe you'll have other things that are going to be on your list that are of higher priority for a different reason. We each have different values, and each of our values is important to us and became important to us either because of nature, who we are and how we grew up and our just how we came into the world, or nurture, how it was nurtured into us, how we were raised, our community, our school, our education, our friends, our larger community, the world, how we're influenced. Those things are going to have a strong impact on us.
I want to focus on values for a second, because a question that happened this morning, I was counseling a couple this morning and a question came up. And the question, without going into the details of the couple, was, can love overpower values? Which means if we love each other, and I agree with you, it's impossible. So here, So we had a situation where someone had a value of religious identity. It happened to be that they're a Jewish couple, and one of them, Shabbat is very important. The other one, not sure if Shabbat is important. Interested, not sure. And they're having a values conflict. Now, they love each other deeply. They love each other sincerely. And they looked at me and said, but we really, really love each other. And I could see they really do. But they were really butting heads on a values conflict of Shabbat.
So this specific example I had with a couple, and the interesting thing was the same thing, love each other. That was the foundation. And they said, because this is second time around, we're both divorced. We already had our children. We're not looking to have more children. And we live in different cities, and sometimes we're together on the weekends and sometimes we're not. The compromise was made that was that when they were in the same city, that they would observe Shabbat, but when they were apart, that the partner that was not observing Shabbat was going to do whatever they did normally for their weekends. And that was just what it was. And it was a very unique situation and an unusual situation. And that for them was a way to work it out. But if you ask me if we could work this out with a couple that's looking to raise children and to celebrate on a weekly basis together with a family in a home in the same place, I think it would be very difficult.
So the couple I had this morning was not looking to raise children. The problem is that they work really hard during the week and their weekends are really important. And she wants to go out with him on Saturday.
Right.
But he's Shomer Shabbat. He's like, I'll go out, but let's go out for lunch. Let's go out for...
Let's go out Saturday night.
But she's like, but this is my only day of the week. Let's go shopping.
Right.
So this whole idea that love can conquer all, there's an idea. And so many people today get into relationships for love. Can love conquer all? Or do we have to put a hard stop somewhere and say, no, love is not enough? Or I want to actually challenge this a bit and say, not only is love not enough, but does love matter as much as blank, blank, blank? Does it? Does love matter as much as values?
It depends on the couple and how flexible people are. I've seen people with values, and their values are not just a value to the highest degree. In every, 10 different values that they have, each one, if you ask them 1 out of 10, you know, 1 is not important, 10 is very important. They would give every single one 10, 10, 10, 10, 10. Somebody like that can't compromise. But somebody who says, oh yeah, I want this, and that's to a value of 8, and this is 6, and this is 7, and this is 9, and they're not extremely rigid about holding onto their value, and the value is the most important thing. Maybe love is one of their values, and maybe that's the highest. Somebody like that could prioritize.
Can love be a value?
Being in a loving relationship?
No, I didn't know. That's being in a loving relationship, we don't know. We can't look at two singles and say being in a loving relationship is a value. Can love be a value?
That's a good question.
I don't think so. I don't think love is a value. I think love is chemical. I think it's what happens. Defining love. I mean, you and I, we've tried so many different times to define love, and yes, it's a really big question. Defining love.
I'm going to sit with that. I'm not sure if love can be a value. I have to think about it, and I have to go through my charts and see who has listed love or not listed love. I don't think they have
actually. I think it's important because we were asked to talk about 5 reasons to reject your date. And I think if there's a values conflict, you should be rejecting your date.
Correct. That's one of the 5.
If you really know if these, now, caveat here, you can't have 50 values, because for every non-negotiable, and we've talked about this before, you and I, for every non-negotiable, you have to negotiate on a lot of things. So if you have too many non-negotiables, if you have too many values, then you're not going to find anyone. You might as well just marry yourself. But if you have two.
That went over well, by the way, Rabbi. People are laughing.
Oh, by the way, I used to joke about it, but I heard it's called sologamy. I don't do this kind of wedding yet, but if you wanted me to marry you to your alter ego, I would consider it. Only so we don't clog up the system. I would do it for the sake of all the people who you would have dated otherwise that wouldn't work. So for the sake of the world, maybe I would marry you to yourself.
Apparently that's being done on Dr. Phil's show. Somebody wrote in.
Okay, well, no comment on that. So, and I think this is really important, right? Values. If you have one or two or three real non-negotiables, real values, I would say you're going to end up with a lot of conflict. Going back to personality as well. If you have extreme differences in personality, conflict will arise. That could be a reason to reject your date. Again, it comes down to knowing yourself, knowing who you are, not necessarily knowing what you're looking for.
When we're talking about rejecting a date, though, I just want to put in the caveat. Even if your values aren't exactly the same or to the same degree, we need them to be aligned or in alignment so that we can move ahead. To what degree? Okay, that's a really good question. It can't be that there's a deal breaker. Wherever there's a deal breaker with any of these categories, it breaks the deal and nothing else matters. So in personality, if there's something about that person's personality that you can't get over and you can't accept, then it breaks the deal. Nothing, none of the other categories matter. Once you find one deal breaker in one category, it's done and everything else we don't even care about because we can't get over this one issue. So that's actually the quickest way to figure out if you should or shouldn't reject your date. If you're, I don't know, maybe is not a rejection. It's just lacking clarity and you need to have clarity. And the that's way to so have important. Clarity is to become an expert in this.
That is so important because so often we reject our dates because we don't know. The right. Number one answer that we got today, and we'll bring that back up because it's just so fascinating. The number one answer that we got today when we asked why you should reject your date was, I don't know. That was the number one. Look, and it's getting bigger and bigger. I don't know. I don't know means I don't have clarity. That means you need clarity. That doesn't mean you should reject your date.
Correct. Rabbi, I had this thought the other day. I'll tell everybody a quick story. I went into a jeweler because this lovely necklace that I had, it was a stone popped out and I went to have it fixed. So I went to the jeweler and he said, oh, I don't have any, I'm here in Israel and still working on the translation here. No, I don't have any, you know, whatever fake stones to put in there. I said, no, that's a real stone. He said, what? He looked at it again. He goes, oh, he said, you know, this is a fake out here. This big stone in the center is actually fake, but all the rest is real. I popped this one out. I put it in a ring and I was like, oh, it's a big one. It should go in a ring. It doesn't need to be in a necklace. And this is a piece of jewelry from my mom. This is from my grandma. I put it all together. This is actually, that's the only fake thing in it. Everything else is real. He goes, oh, I didn't know. I thought because I saw that one that it was fake. The whole thing was fake. You need a real stone? I have a real stone. Give it to me. I'll fix it for you. Okay. What happened in that moment? He had clarity because he knew the difference between real and fake. He had clarity, but he actually hadn't investigated the entire situation. And I thought to myself, how interesting is it? This is a man who's an expert in gemology. He knows stones inside and out. I don't know about you, but if you don't know about diamonds or stones, do you know whether it's real or fake? Unless you have the loop and you look and you know and you see and you know exactly what makes it real or not real, you don't actually know. And that's exactly the point about rejecting your date. Unless you know, and unless you're an expert in this, you don't know, which is why we're giving this over, because we want each and every one of you to become an expert in this so that you'll know the right time to reject your date and say thank you, goodbye, and feel good about it and feel confident. And you'll know the right time to say, oh, you know what? I don't have enough information. I need to go out again. I shouldn't just end this right now.
Lisa, I have a good title for you. You are a claritologist.
I love it. Perfect. I needed a new title. Thank you. Yes. I don't have enough.
I think you should start calling yourself a claritologist because clarity is such a powerful, powerful tool.
Yeah.
Because so many people reject dates because they're not clear. They're not clear on who they are. They're not clear on what they're looking for. And they're not clear in the situation. And having that clarity, knowing, no, this is really someone I'm looking for. It just looks like it's fake, but it's not fake.
Right.
That's really powerful.
Right. And somebody just wrote in, clarity is knowing oneself. Yes. And clarity is knowing oneself in comparison to the other person that you are dating, which means when I know me, I'm an expert in me. Great. You've got 50% of the equation. You have to become an expert in them, which means you might have to go out with them 2, 3, 4, 5 times to get to know them before you're going to say no. Now, you might have an instinct after a first date to reject them. You might have a little bit of information to say, maybe I should reject them after a second date or a third date. But after a fifth date, you might go, aha, I know now why I can reject them. This is something that will never work. And because this will never work, even if there's good there, I'm not missing my person because I can't get over this. And that's a reason to say no.
Yes. So let's kind of summarize here. If values are similar and compatibility is similar, can it work?
Values and personality are similar. Can it work?
Yes.
Maybe there's 3 more categories that we might reject them on.
There's the setup.
Thanks for the lead in, Rabbi.
Always there. Okay. What's number three?
Number three is fears. Okay. Fears is a broad category. Fears is anything that you have that is a fear for you or comes from your history or something that lives within you, has nothing to do with them. Anybody you date potentially could trigger this because this is within you. So let's throw it out to everybody. Give me a list of fears. What are people afraid of in general in relationships, getting into a relationship? What are people afraid of? Short-term, long-term, any-term relationships?
Afraid of myself in a relationship?
Afraid of myself, yes. I'm not sure how I'm going to act. Not sure how I'm going to behave, yes. And you come out differently every time.
Abandonment, fear of abandonment.
Fear of the unknown.
Getting burned, heartbroken.
Yep. Unemployment.
Mm-hmm.
Fear of not being enough.
Yes. Rejection, fear of divorce. A lot of people who come from divorced homes, we just covered that in our podcast. A lot of people that come from divorced homes have a fear of divorce.
Even if you don't come from a divorced home, 50% of relationships are getting, marriages are getting divorced. So it's a normal, healthy fear to have.
Absolutely. Conflict.
Conflict or violence in a relationship.
Fear of getting hurt. Yes.
Fear of them needing me to take care of them.
Oh, yeah. Emotional abuse.
Fear of commitment.
Facades.
A fear that I need to make all the decisions.
Wow.
Fear of addictions. Yep.
So what do you do if you are coming into a date with these fears? You're probably going to be rejecting people and having nothing to do with them. And so many people, I see a lot of people rejecting dates and it has nothing to do with the date. It has to do with themselves. So if you have these fears, what is something that you can do in order to alleviate those fears, in order to find the clarity, in order to be able to actually not reject the date?
Okay, so that is a setup for me to tell you that's maybe not possible. Okay, here's Aliza's take on this, and then we're going to get Rabbi's take on this. Aliza's take is whatever fears that we have, we come in with, they're within us. We could do therapy on them for days, weeks, months, or years. We can talk about them. We can acknowledge them. We can work through them. We can have an awareness about them. We can practice not getting triggered as much because we know that this is my stuff. But my personal belief is that we all have baggage, and these fears are a part of that baggage. Some people's suitcase is 10 pounds. Some people's suitcase is 50 pounds. Some people's suitcase is an overweight bag that's 100 pounds. And we carry that through life with us. And it can be shifted over time. But in general, what we have is what we have. Usually we continue to be triggered throughout life by those things. Therefore, we need to A, have an awareness. We do need to always be working on it. And we need to seek a partner who, when they trigger us, it doesn't trigger us to a 10, which is like, whoa, red flag, triggers us to a 2, a 3, a 4, no more than a 5, 6. Like, it has to be on the usually triggering us to a lower degree just because of who they are, just because of their personality.
Example of that? I just think of any fear, any trigger, it's going to be like a 10. I'm right away getting very emotional.
Fear of, let's take some of the examples. Fear of abandonment. Okay. So fear of abandonment. If I date somebody who travels regularly, who is constantly meeting new people, jet setting, not so scheduled and organized, very fly by the seat of their pants, I'm going to constantly be triggered. I have a fear you're going to leave me. You're always taking off. You're always taking off last minute. I don't get any notice. I don't know when you're coming back because you're not so scheduled and organized. And I just don't feel good about this relationship compared to I am with a partner who's got a 9-to-5 job, drives in and out of the same place for the last 15 years, always comes home for dinner at 6 o'clock. You know, if they make or have a change of plans, they call me, they text me, they give me a calendar or a schedule, invite, update, notification, something, right? I know where my partner is. I know what's happening. It's not that I don't trust them. It's that I don't, in general, have a certain trust. I'm afraid of just somebody walking out on me because that happened to me. So a partner who has habits that aren't triggering for me are very healthy for me to be in a relationship with.
So if I know that my partner has a fear of abandonment, for example, and these are great examples, and I know that I am someone who travels a lot for business, but I say to her or to him or to them, I am coming back on Tuesday at 2 o'clock. I'll see you then. And I continuously update them along the way. Is just those actions alleviating the fear? Is that good enough? Is there something that can't be changed? Because it sounds to me like these fears are all fears, but they can be alleviated with the right amount of communication.
Yes, and it depends on the degree of somebody's fear. So if their fear isn't triggered, I'm using 1 to 10, 1 being low and 10 being high. If their fear of abandonment is triggered to a 7 or an 8, that could work for them. If their fear is triggered to a 10, they're going to feel better what you're doing, but they're still going to have a lot of anxiety while you're gone. It's going to, that type of lifestyle
anxiety
will bother.
Is fine. You can't change your own anxiety, but you could still be in a relationship.
No, I'm going to tell you, I chose not to marry a doctor or a lawyer. I chose not to marry a certain type of professional in a certain type of industry because they had a certain type of lifestyle that I didn't want to live, because that for me would have been a trigger, and marrying them would have been a problem. It wouldn't have worked, and I wouldn't have liked the lifestyle that we were living, and it would have constantly irritated me because it wasn't just a fear, it also bothered my values because I didn't value somebody who was doing those things either, right? So it could also be that this is not just a trigger for the fear. It might be a trigger for a value as well. So we're not just, can't just put it in that nice little neat fear box and be like, oh, okay, I'm going to call you. I'm going to update you. I'm going to text you. I'm going to be home. When I say I'm going to be home, I'm going to do all these things. And now your partner feels better. They still might not feel better because there still might be a values conflict there.
So the values conflict can interfere with the fear.
Any of these 5 categories can interplay with one of the other categories. It's not so neat and clean that it can just be in a box.
Do you have to be in love before you get married?
Nope.
I agree.
Sorry if you don't like that answer, but no.
I so agree with that. And I know it's so counterintuitive to everything that we are taught in this society, to all the rom-coms. I am so sorry for all those romantic comedies that you watched. Love will not conquer all, and you don't have to be in love, but you do have to have your fears at bay. And like you said, you made a conscious choice with values of the person you married, knowing that you could handle a certain something. That's so important. Now, somebody else mentioned in the chat here a comparison between values and the 5 love languages. Do you think the 5 love languages are value?
The 5 love languages are how
we a person, 5 love languages, based on Gary Chapman.
Yeah.
By the way, I don't know if I should let the cat out of the bag, but Aliza is in the middle of writing a book with Gary Chapman.
Well, no, we're going to release the faith-based 5 love languages for singles version.
Oops. I don't know if I was supposed to.
Hush, hush. Not so hush, hush.
So values, so the 5 love languages, how a person wants to be loved, is that a value?
Yeah, I have to just go back to them. So we have acts of service.
Physical touch.
Yep.
Words of affirmation, quality time. Are those values? Gifts.
They can be. Yeah, they can be.
Okay. So I think that's an important, these are what we're doing here. And it's interesting how kind of we're talking this out loud is we're actually coming to values that maybe you wouldn't think are values. For example, if physical touch is your love language and you marry someone who was abused and they're afraid of touch, that's a scary thing. Or if acts of service are your love language and you are in a relationship with someone who is not able to give for whatever reason. Let's say they're more of a selfish type of person and they have a certain tendency. You like that because maybe they're the alpha male. Some people like that, but they're not, it's harder for them to give. And they only give on their terms, not on your terms.
Right.
But these are going to be values conflicts. So yeah, I would have to agree with you on that.
Right.
Okay.
Okay. By the way,
keep on sending your questions in, because instead of taking the questions at the end, we're just going to kind of do this live. We have two more of these five to go through. So we went through personality. We went through values. We went through fears. Now, this is an interesting one because I don't see a difference just offhand between fears and bothers.
Okay. Bothers are everything to do with the other person. Fears are everything to do with me. So if I have a fear, this is coming from me, my history, who I am. No matter what relationship I'm going to be in, I'm going to carry that fear with me. In terms of bothers, or the word irritants, something that bothers me about you, specifically you, I'm going to be dating somebody and this is going to bother me about them. But when I date somebody else, I'm going to have a whole different list of bothers. So it changes according to the person, whereas fears come with me into every relationship that I'm in.
So fears about me, bothers are about you.
Correct. And if you are in an early relationship in the first 2, 3, 5 dates, and you're like, Lisa, nothing bothers me. Everything's really nice. It's just going so well. Great. That's usually called infatuation. It's a really amazing place to be. You've got to find things that bother you about your partner. At least 3 to 5 things that get under your skin, because we're not angels. We're humans. We are supposed to have things that bother us about other people. Or you're somebody that really has no preferences in life. Like nothing really matters. It could be this way or that way, up or down, left or right, good or bad. Nothing matters to you. You're always fine and you're always happy and nothing ever bothers you. If you're that kind of person, contact me, because I haven't met one of those yet and I would like to meet you. But other than that, everybody has things that bother them, and there should be healthy, normal things that bother you about your partner. And the question is, how much does it bother you? And is it to a degree that you're like, well, it bothers me, but I could really handle that. I know how to manage that. I know how to manage myself around that. I know how to handle somebody who does that. That's okay with me. So it could be anything from like they pick their teeth every time they eat and it just bothers you. It's like so irritating. Why they like sit at the table like this? They're like talking to you with their finger in their mouth and you're like, what are you doing? Right? That might really bother you. Or that they have, I don't know, jagged yellow teeth, or that when they talk to you, you know, like they're looking another direction, or they're just not paying, like they, you think they're not paying attention, but they're totally invested in you, but they're not looking at you. And that might bother you. We're not making a judgment on it. It's not, this is a good trait or this is a bad trait. It is, this is something that you do or something about you that bothers me that I don't like. And I either I'm going to figure out how to be okay with it, because I could live with it for a lifetime, or I'm not going to figure out how to be okay with it, because I can't be okay with it. And this is a deal breaker for me.
Can you get over a bother? I'll give you an example. Someone just wrote in the chat, what bothers me is someone chewing with their mouth open.
Right. It's so annoying. And they're talking and they're chewing and then they're making the sounds in your ears. And some people have really loud chewing and some people have
like scratching on a blackboard.
Yeah. No, I get it. So can you get over a bother? So there's no such thing as getting over it. There is either accepting it or not. So if I accept it, I'm never going to like it, but I accept that this is part of the package. Okay, so I'm going to take the good with this other thing and I'll say that that's mine and it's okay. I don't like it. I'm never going to like it, but I'm not going to make you crazy over it because I chose to accept this and this is a part of the package.
So the bother is just accepting it. If I accept it, it's good. Now
it's acceptable. Good is good. It's never good.
But what ends up happening is when we really like someone, and we're going to use a word that we, you know, infatuation, because when we're over the moon during that stage, all of a sudden things that bother us, they don't bother us anymore. Is that okay? Is that healthy?
No, you should keep dating until you find things that bother you. Again, if you can't find, you should find five things you like and five things that bother you. And if you can do that, you're dating a real human and you're level-headed as you're thinking about it.
What if you're, I'm going to say, and I'm going to use a generalization here that I hate to use, you're a little older. And as we get older, more things bother us. We don't have the tolerance that we have when we're younger. And you're like, okay, someone's watching this and saying, well, there's a lot of things that bother me. I don't know. There's not five things. There's 50 things that bother me. And there's 50 things that bother me about every human. What do you do in that case?
So we look at the top five things that bother you because those are the most important ones. And we evaluate those if we can really choose to live with them. And then we say, okay, this 50 things bother me about everybody, but these 50 things, I could figure out how to navigate. I'm never going to like them, but the rest of the package works nicely. And therefore, I'm willing to accept this as what comes with the package.
Okay, let's talk about second relationships. What if the woman you're in a relationship with loves her kids more than she loves you? Isn't loving your partner first and foremost the most important thing in the whole world?
Yeah, so we'd have to...
in the chat.
we have to talk about the definition of love. And in Hebrew, the word ahava, love, the root of it, hav, means to give. And the reason that she loves her children more is because she's been giving to them for longer, because she's known them for a longer period of time, because she's been developing a relationship with them and constantly nurturing and giving to them over the course of years. So when you say like, oh, she loves them more than me, I'm going, yeah, of course, makes sense. If she loved you more than them, I would wonder how well she really took care of her children, because she probably didn't, because she probably wasn't so involved. Because if she is involved, she will naturally develop more love for them.
Yes.
I saw your little.
Yes. No, that was a good mic drop.
Mic drop.
That was a good mic drop.
But over the course of time, I would expect somebody to be giving to their partner and developing love for their partner and care for their partner deeply and want to share in life with them. But it would be a very hard thing to say, you know, do they love me more than they love their children? And
do you want a partner also? I look at you and say, do you want a partner or do you want someone who's going to be your slave or your maid? You know,
I think this person is thinking, I want to be loved and I don't want to be second to somebody else's children, which in reality, depending on how old they are, you may not come first if they're on the younger end of things. And if they're older, you could say to your partner, listen, I'm choosing you and I want to be in a relationship with you and I want to make your children a priority and I want to make our relationship a higher priority. And then you have to see what they say and talk it out.
It could be circumstantial. It could be the kids are young and they're not going to be young forever. Eventually, they're going to move out of the house and then you'll have what you want. But you also need to know that if it's a person who's giving, they're going to be giving to all the people in their life, especially the people who. So if you want that kind of person, it's not a bad idea to find someone who circumstantially has some kids at home right now, because you're going to find a person who's giving.
Right.
What about the situation where someone says, he kept asking me, do you follow what I mean? You know, you understand what I'm saying? Often I think that's a circumstantial thing. Like if he's saying that, it's because you're not giving him any emotional feedback. He's trying to get emotional feedback from you.
Yes. And I do think it's a certain personality type that will constantly be looking for reassurance and confirmation and those things. And I had one guy that we knew and he was like, you know, like, you know what I mean? Like with a wink and a snap, right? Right. It just gets under some people's skin. And for other people, they're like, that doesn't bother me. Like, that's just his little personality thing. That's his quirky little thing that he does. I mean.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think that can go in a category of being a deal breaker for somebody that it bothers tremendously.
Right.
And if it bothers you and you choose not to live with it, you're definitely not going to want to have that. And that person is not going to change. That's how they are.
Dirt under the fingernails.
I mean, you can change habits and teach people to wash fingers, but if they're, Rabbi, if they're more chill, flexible, go with the flow, then the reason there's dirt there is because they're, it's a personality thing where they're always relaxed and like those things just don't bother them. So it's not dirt under the fingernails. Why is the dirt under the fingernails? Like, do they have a job that's outdoors or do they have a personality that's chill? If it's a personality, it's not changing so fast. So either accept it or move on.
Yeah. What if you're dating long distance? This is from someone who's here now. And the person comes for the entire weekend and does not ask one question about you. Should you continue to see them?
Probably not.
Unless you like them and you don't need to have them ask any questions about you, because
why would you like them?
I don't know. Maybe
they don't know anything about you. You only know about them. What is there to like about them? They didn't give you a chance to, you didn't get a chance to connect.
Yeah.
It was a one-way connection.
Yeah. Someone says men are known to talk more to impress the women. Also, when they're, some people, when they're nervous, they like to talk. They're feeling.
No, but if somebody was there for a whole weekend, like at least by the second, third date, you know, there's got to be a shift.
Yeah.
But also by the same token, you know, like pause, try to interrupt, which I'm sure they're going to be like, I did. You know, they usually tell me that. So.
Or they didn't.
Right.
Someone says here, I'm okay with age difference as long as they're my age range and everything else matches up. I don't want someone to be so young that they could be my child or so old that they could be my father. You know, you and I differ on this.
We have a different opinion.
Yeah, I say no more than 10 years and you don't like that.
I'm not saying no more than 10 years. I think, you know, 10 years in either direction and either gender can be a healthy balance. But I am also saying that I have seen 12, 15 and up to 25 years difference. And those people, if I've asked them and they're like, Aliza, if you would have said no, and I can't go out with them, or that's not acceptable, or that's wrong, I would have missed my soulmate. And so I think in unusual circumstances, I'm going to call it somewhere around 15 years and up is much more unusual. And somewhere between up to, I'm going to even say up to 12 years, I see as fairly common in the marketplace.
What if your political orientation doesn't match up? Is that a bother that is a non-negotiable?
That's a value. That's my friend, is a clear value difference. And if you really love your politics, it could be a bother. It could be a bother. It could also be, it's probably a value difference because politics isn't just like, oh, it just bothers me. They're of a different political orientation. It's usually that our values are different. The way we look at the world, behave in the world, and operate in the world is very different.
What if you love rock climbing and that person doesn't? Is that a bother or a values conflict?
Right. Is it a lifestyle or is it a hobby? If it's a lifestyle, it's a values conflict. If it's a hobby, it's a bother.
You hear that? Lifestyle versus hobby. If you like to do things, that's wonderful. You can find girlfriends and boyfriends to do those things with. You don't have to do everything with your partner. When I was engaged, I was staying with a friend of mine. His father had just gotten divorced. And he starts saying, oh, wow, you're engaged. You know, starts asking me all these questions. He just got divorced. And he says to me, what if you don't like the same toothpaste?
Really?
Yeah.
I mean, that's an easy one. We can just
find two. It's so easy. Just get two tubes. I mean, how hard is that?
Look, to me, rock climbing is a bigger deal. Usually, I'm just going to take this one example because you gave it. Rock climbing is, it usually goes into the category of physical fitness, health, and wellness. So that's a value. That's not a hobby or an interest or just a bother. It goes into sometimes extreme sports / drive, passion. So all of that, right? Again, we're dumping that into a value category. It's not just it bothers me that we can't do the same things together. It's that I really have a different line of values and we're not as aligned as I'd like to be with a partner.
Yeah. Well, what about movies, film, TV?
Are you a film producer? Because if you are, it might be a problem. We might have a value.
You just like watching Netflix. You like watching movies, and the person who you're dating doesn't want to do that. They think it's disgusting and it's popular culture. And what are you giving in to the?
So don't put the rock climber with the Netflix watcher, because the rock climber values physical fitness, health, being active and getting out there in the world. And the rock and the movie enthusiast enjoys watching high good entertainment online and being fulfilled that way. So they're going to have, it's going to be a bigger issue. It's probably personality conflict. 1, 2, values conflict. 3, definitely they're going to have a fear of not being in alignment with their part. They're probably going to hit 4 out of 5 categories.
We didn't hit
the fifth category.
Yeah, we'll get there soon.
Fifth category.
Someone says here, I once dated a woman who was 4 to 5 inches taller than me. It bothered me for 5 dates, and then I didn't notice it anymore. What do you think about that? Things that bother you, but then after getting to know a person, the person's personality can take over the bother. Is that possible?
Yes, 100%. And that's a great example of it. Yeah. Yes.
Yeah, I think it's such a powerful thing. Such a powerful thing.
The question is, who's going to wait 5 dates to figure it out? If they're working with us, they will. If they're doing it on their own, they might not.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. I mean, you talk about the 5-day challenge. And I've actually, since meeting you, I've tried this recently with a few people. And yeah, it's crazy. Most people don't even give more than, you know, I used to say, give them 2 dates.
2 or 3, people say, up to 3.
2 or 3. But when I met you, and you say 5 dates, 5 dates, that's so much. But a lot, look at this person here. A lot changed in 5 dates, even to the point where there was 5 inches. For some people, that's a very big deal.
Huge.
Huge. 5 dates, wow.
Yeah, the 5-date challenge, there's a lot of parts to it, but one is that you choose to date the same person 5 times before saying no or being all in. You choose to just keep going out. If there's a hard deal breaker, you say no at date 1, 2, 3, whatever. But other than that, if you're like, I don't know, maybe I'm not excited, I'm not sure, go out. When in doubt, go out. Date them till you hate them. Keep going, keep trying. And at 5 dates, we'll make an official decision.
As long as
we'll
they don't repulse you, right? As long as they don't repulse you.
Correct. In any of these categories.
That's right. Somebody asked if you're together for the weekend, is that 3 dates?
It's very difficult because it's this dense, fast time that people are together and they are in a whirlwind of emotion, and it's, on one hand, it's almost like it was one big long date. And on the other hand, you got to see different sides of their personality and different sides of their values and different sides of their fears and all of these different things. So it's not exactly 3 dates. It's a little bit less than what you normally would think it is, because it was all smushed together and you don't have time apart. And I would tell you, don't even make a decision right when they leave. Let them leave. Think about it, sleep on it a night, 2 nights, 3 nights, everybody regroup, talk to each other again, and like wait till you see the emotions level back out.
Does it include Zooms and phone calls, 5 dates?
No.
In person only?
Not exactly. So there's long-term Zoom dating and long-term, long-distance dating, and it gets a little bit complicated. I need you to have at least 3 in person combined with multiple Zoom things to add up to your 5, because it's not enough information.
Somebody here says, could it be that if you agree to 5 dates because you want to see if it can work out, but the other person thinks it's too serious?
Yeah, the other person might ditch you at date 2 or 3. And then you're like, well, clarity. I was willing to go for 5. I followed the rules. I did it the right way.
Yeah.
But they dumped me. Okay, good. Next. It happens that way also. Whoever has the lowest tolerance and the lowest threshold bails first. Or whoever finds the deal breaker bails first.
Right. Yes.
This is like, where's Waldo? This is like, where's the deal breaker? Rabbi, we could write that like the children's book. Like, where's the deal breaker?
Yes. Right. I like that. Okay.
Okay. Let's go to
let's go to number 5, because the time is running out.
No, because it's my favorite category.
And I am so happy this is number 5 and not number 1. I can't even tell you how happy I am that you made this number 5 and not number 1.
I usually make it number 1, but it really belongs at number 1. It really belongs at number 1.
It should be number 1.
But it's 5 right now.
It should be number five. I'm happy that it is.
Here's why it comes at number five. Looks, okay? Looks goes like this. If you are repulsed, if you look at them and you go, there is no way I am going to wake up next to this human for the rest of my life. I cannot do it. I don't care what your reason is. You don't even have to justify it. If it is a hard no way, this is not for me, you're done. Anything other than a hard no is a yes for another date. It's either a hard no or you go. That's it. You just keep going out because it will either become a hard no or like the guy who dated the girl that was taller, it will actually become okay. And you'll be like, wow, I didn't think that was going to be okay with me on date one. I was maybe going to not even stick with it, but I was following Aliza's rules. So I tried it and I guess I'll just keep trying it. So the problem or the challenge is that people have a hard time staying in and staying motivated and keeping things moving when they're not, when their eyes are not physically feasting on the person in front of them, when they're not excited by what they're seeing.
And you think that's for men and women?
Yes, it is. Ladies have preferences too.
Okay. We do. I'm just asking. So
women, not all, but women tend to be a little bit more generous with looking with a good eye on the inside and waiting for the outside to catch up. And generally speaking, men tend to judge the outside and have a lower tolerance for letting the inside catch up.
I think that's really important. And so if you come back from the date and you don't know, and the person is not repulsing you, you should do it again.
Correct. I don't know is a yes for now. Anything other than a hard no, I'm repulsed.
Yes,
no way, Jose.
No.
Yes for now. You don't have to like them. You don't have to think there's potential. You don't have to anything. It's not a hard no. It's a go. It's not a hard no. It's a go. That's it. That's
so important, because so often we just like, I don't know. And so I'm not going to.
I don't know. This is what people say. I don't know. And since I don't know, I mean, I would know if it's my person. So because it's not a yes, it must be a no. That's the wrong reasoning. Okay. That we have guilty until proven innocent. In this, we have, it's my person until proven not. Unless you are repulsed, this is your person until it's no longer your person. We're just going to go out.
Yes.
It's going to freak people out. I'm sorry.
I'm just really taking this in because it's such an important thing. We're not looking for someone we can marry. We're looking for someone we can date again.
We're not even looking for someone we can date again. We're just choosing to date again because this is the right way to date, because I won't have clarity unless I actually know. And I cannot know unless I give it a try and I gather more data and information. I got to know what's in your heart. I've got to know what's in your head. I see your face. I have to experience your personality. I have to know if you trigger my fears. When I pull all of that data together, then I can make a really educated, good decision. And in any one of the five categories, if I have a deal breaker, I don't care which category it is, one singular deal breaker, one, it breaks the whole thing. You can say no and walk away with confidence and clarity, because I said no because I decided this 100% doesn't work for me, not 99%, 100%. 99 is not 100.
So if it's 99, you still date again.
You'd go out on another date. Either they're going to dump you, or you're going to dump them, or you're going to get over it and you're going to make it work. But I don't know what's going to happen.
I think if there's one thing that people take out of today's conversation, this is it. Because so often we reject the person who we shouldn't reject because we don't know. And because we're not sure. Unless you're 100, and you know how they say 150% sure, you should not reject.
Just 100. I don't know.
So if you're still not sure, that means there's interest.
No, it doesn't. No. Wait. It doesn't mean there's interest. It means you're not repulsed. It means there's enough data and baseline information that it's the person that's in front of you that you should continue to evaluate. I don't like to put judgment on this because our true emotions are going to start to fight us if we aren't articulate and clear about this. And it happens to be the person that you chose to date right now that you're evaluating. If you're repulsed and if there's a deal breaker, it's a no. If there's not, you don't even have to think about anything. I take away all of the processing until we need to use it. And somewhere around the fifth date is when we need to use it. And even before then, we only need to use it if there's an actual deal breaker. And if there's no deal breaker or not enough of one in any category, it takes away the stress of dating. My whole goal is that dating, I just got a call from a client today. Aliza, I'm burnt out. I want to go up about this process and I'm done. I want to find my person and I want to be done because I'm done and I don't like this process and it's not easy and it's not fun and I'm not enjoying myself anymore. And I don't know how much more of this I can take. That's a problem because I need them to date until they find their person. I need them to figure this out. And they're the only one that can figure this out. I can't do it for them. So we have to get people not burnt out. And the way to not burn people out is to go through the process a little bit more easily. You're still going to date. You still might be bored on a date. You still might not like a date, but you don't have to spin out in your thinking. It doesn't have to make you crazy. It doesn't have to take over your mind. You can go to work tomorrow because you're just going to go out with them the next day and you're going to figure it out later. I'm not asking you to process anything. You don't need to process it today. Your brain, you know, you go to sleep, you wake up, you go to sleep, you wake up. Your brain is constantly processing the data and information. The reason we go out is because we don't have enough data and information. And when we do, our brains are really smart. We're going to know the answer and we're going to be 100% clear. And we're going to know the difference between if it's real or fake. And if it's real, you're going to move ahead. Right. And if it's fake and not for you, you're going to break up.
What about the difference between processing it yourself versus processing it with another person, like a coach?
Right. I like processing with other people if you need it. So
what about the random person on the bus?
Yeah, not my favorite, unless they're a random expert. It's very difficult when you process with friends or family members or people that are emotionally invested in your process. They want to see you happy. When you're in the dating process, unless you're happy and you're with the person and you're so excited, you're not. And other than that, you're not feeling happy. And the people you're with most likely are going to follow your emotions and either tell you, A, well, you don't look happy. So maybe this isn't your person. Not a true fact. Okay. They're also maybe going to say to you, well, you're not really giving them enough of a chance. You never give anybody a chance. You should give them more of a chance. Also not true. I don't know. Maybe you should, maybe you shouldn't. You're going to know how to process it better on your own if you use these tools. And I'm not opposed to processing with other people. It just has to be the right person who's going to give you good advice. What really irritates me is bad or wrong advice. We're like, oh, you should break up. Oh, you should definitely keep seeing them. How do you know? Are you an expert in this field? Have you been studying this for years? Do you know how many hundreds of couples have gone through this and what their experiences are and what they get out of it and what's the right way to do this? So they don't. If you're going to know more information than most people in your life about it, just from hearing this, just understanding all of the categories. Wait, I want to pop this up, Rabbi. I want to pop up the screen and I want to know if all of our five categories fit everything that everybody put on there.
Just to say this, you need to find the claritologist. You need a claritologist.
Nice, Rabbi, nice labeling.
Okay, we're back. This is your words. These are your words here. What do we see?
Rejecting somebody based on being rude, probably a personality trait. Not religious enough, a value. Somebody being fake, also personality. Physically repulsive, right? Looks, trust issue, value. Lack of attraction, looks. Don't like the personality. Not feeling it is an overall thing that usually means the personality doesn't match, the values aren't aligned enough, and the looks don't do it enough for me.
Or you're not giving the person enough of a chance, which means you're not 100% sure. Not feeling it is, you can't put it into words. Maybe they need another chance.
Could be.
Yeah.
Could be. If it's not based on the data, then it's... Smoker is an irritant, so a bother.
Non-observant values.
Yep.
Zero attraction. Probably looks.
Yep.
Attractive. Yeah. They kind of all
wrong fit. Type personality, bad me, bad cringing.
Causes cringing.
Causes cringing.
Yeah, bothers. Bad reputation.
Right.
Not safe or wholesome. Values. Value. This is good. It works.
Fits into all five categories. Thank you, everybody. You did a good job.
Well done.
Well and I done. Didn't prep anybody here, Rabbi. Nobody knew what to put in there.
Right. We'll believe you. Okay, we have tons of questions coming in. We have very limited amount of time, so let's just rapid fire some of these questions. So that we can get to, so we can get to as many questions as possible before our time is up. Would you recommend being on a first date with others while you're getting to that fifth date with someone else, or one person at a time?
Dating multiple people, is that what they're saying?
No, which means you're in the date 4 of 5 because you committed to the person for 5 dates, but somebody else came up. Would you go on a first date while you're on a fourth date with someone else?
Yeah, so the answer is ideally no. If you're really it gets complicated. Ideally, no. Okay. But for the person who's going out on the fifth date, because you're really trying to do it sincerely, you're 99% out and you're probably going to end it and something very relevant came up, I would either cancel that fifth date because it's really a no for you. Or if you go out and you go out with the other one on a first date, it's because you're going to end the second, you're going to end the other one.
I would say you need a clitorologist.
Ideally dump the person for the fifth date. You're not really in it.
Yeah. How do you deal with criticism of people telling you, why are you taking so long to decide if it's 5 dates? I wish more people understood your philosophy, as I agree.
Yes, I am training hundreds of matchmakers, so stick with me. They're going to all get on board with the 5-date challenge. And I think the answer is because if I knew, I would tell you, and I don't know. So I'm taking a reasonable amount of time to actually get to know this person. And if you'd rather me just dump them after 1 date or 2 dates for an invalid reason, then don't be my matchmaker, because that's not how I operate. No, don't say it like that. But you get my point. I'm being a little snarky because I don't like when people do this either. And it really bothers me. And I actually have gotten rebuked by a matchmaker who was very upset with me that this guy gave a girl 5 dates and she was, into it. And he, by the 5th date, had clarity and he no longer chose to be into it. And she yelled at me and she said, this is not acceptable and you can't do that. I said, oh, I'm so sorry. Would you rather that he just dump her on date 1 or date 2 and not even give her a chance? He really gave her a chance. He really tried. And then he did come up with something that really was a deal breaker for him that was true, instead of just not even giving her a chance. Would you rather me not give her a chance? I got really upset about this. It irritates me to no end. It's the proper way to date. And if something's wrong, you can tell them, well, Aliza said, I talked to Aliza about this. She said, this is the way to do it. And I'm doing it reasonably and fair. And I'm trying my best and my hardest. And when I have clarity, I'll let you know. And I'm going to give myself time. If this doesn't work for you, we probably shouldn't work together, but be nice about it. Be very sweet because you want them on.
Use the Aliza card. Just throw it out. Some people need more time to decide unless they find a deal breaker. Is it okay? It's okay, right?
I've had people do the 10-date challenge. They've taken it further. They're like, Aliza, I didn't know after 5, so I'm still going out. What do you think about that? I said, if you're evaluating fairly, I think that that's great. I think you're really giving them a chance. I had one guy recently tell me he's done this twice and he took it both to at least 10 or more dates. It didn't end up working out with either one of them. And it was on one side or both sides that it didn't work out. He said, but I'm really grateful for the experience because I learned so much. And I really did give both of us a real chance to make this happen. And even though it didn't, I don't regret the investment of time.
That's really important. Some words, Aliza, about the length of dates. Do you have any preferences on the length of dates?
First date, second date, we need to keep it on the shorter end. What is shorter? Oh, it really depends on your circles, but let's call it 2 hours is a normal, healthy.
3 hours.
It could go 3 hours.
Also important to note that very often, depending on your circles, dates are talking heads. You're just talking. If you 5 dates of just talking is not 5 dates, I consider that 1 date.
We want you to get out. We want you to do things. We want you to change up the activities, change up the places that you're going. You can do a nighttime date. You can do a daytime date. You can do it on a weekend. You can do it on a weeknight. You can change up the times and change up the activities so that you see different sides of each other.
It's so important. The 5-day challenge is not five days of talking heads. It's 5 days of really changing it up, seeing people in different circumstances, seeing how they are as just regular humans. That's such an important part of that, of those 5 dates. Okay, I'm going to rephrase this question about looks. Okay, the question is that men and women go for looks, but not because looks is a priority, and not because young and a particular type of person or a type means that you can bear children, better than older men or older women. So how much, and you know, you and I haven't had enough conversation about this to really say if we agree on this or not, but how much does looks go into the fact? And I want to add a caveat to this question. Mm-hmm. We, no matter which, where you come from, our society is inundated with unrealistic expectations of looks because of the media that we consume. It's just a reality. No matter where you come from, I don't care how religious you are. I don't care how we it's just a reality of society today. So that's why I like to say that looks cannot be number one, because very, very often people are unrealistic about looks.
So it's not that it's number one, but it is one of the first things that we judge. And to be quite honest, if somebody, you know, the show Love is Blind, okay, they have two people, they go into these pods, they do not see each other, they only talk and they get to know the inside. And then after they pick their person, then they get to actually go out, physically meet them in person. And it's been a very interesting experiment. A lot of people love it. It's a very popular show, but it's extremely fascinating because people are choosing people based on the inside and they fall in love with the personality, the values. They know the fears aren't being triggered. They know the things that bother them about them they can handle from the types of conversations they're having. And the one category that they have not solidified is the looks category.
Yeah, but so, I never saw the show, and it's the first time I'm hearing about the show. And I would say it's a show, they're probably good looking anyway, because you know you're on a show.
Okay. Good looking, I'm just gonna say this. Good looking is a very relative term. I have shown men and women, model-esque type looking men and women, they're like, oh, it's not my type. I'm like, no, but generically speaking, this is like a good looking person. Like, no, it's not my type. So the whole like, oh, they're good looking. No, they're only good looking if, to me, I think they're good looking. You could show me 50 different people. If it's not my look, it doesn't matter that they would be looking like a television star or not. It's still not my look. I'm still not going to find it attractive. I'm just going to think it's a nice person, but it's not a nice looking person for me. It doesn't just because universally a lot of people say it, it still doesn't mean it's going to work for somebody. But the looks category is a very interesting category. So I'm going to take it to a far extreme. And I mean this in a very genuine, sincere, direct way. If a person is blind and they don't see a person physically, they don't have this category. This category disappears for them completely, and they marry based on everything else. True or not? It's true. It's true. If you do not have your eyes to view somebody, it is based on your experience of that person in a very different way. If you have your eyes to see in this world, we look at things, we look at people, we look at homes, we look at cars, and we all choose something different. And beauty in my eyes is very different than beauty in your eyes. And I'm going to want to be with somebody that is pleasing to my eyes. To what degree? Different story. But enough that it draws me in and it connects me. Because just the way, same way that we eat food and it hits our taste buds and it either tastes good and it suits us, or we could have an allergic reaction to it. So some people have, I'm going to call it an allergic reaction to different looks that don't suit them. And I'm not going to judge somebody based on that, because you, Rabbi, me, everybody here is going to choose somebody based on our preferences. And to what degree do we need what we need? Okay. Mm-hmm. So I worked with a client and we went through the list of needs and in the looks category, how much do you need it to look like this and this and this? And everything was like 10, 10, 10, 10, 10, 10. I said, okay. So we don't have a lot of flexibility here. And she was like, nope, we don't. I said, okay. Right. So if, like you say, Rabbi, every time that there's a non-negotiable, there has to be a negotiable. So if looks has to be very, very, very specific to what you want and not deviate from that so much at all, you're going to have to give somewhere else. Does that mean you're giving up on some of your values? Does that mean that you're okay if somebody triggers your fears a little bit more? Does that mean that you're okay that they bother or irritate you in a certain way, that you're willing to handle more, that you're willing to take on more? We have to have flex in other areas. And some people, they will tell me, Aliza, I'll handle a personality like that because they've got the look that I want. I said, okay, that's your choice. But I have to tell you, Looks fade over time, looks sag over time, and personality does not. Personality does not change. You're going to be stuck with it for the rest of your life. Then the looks are going to go down over time. The personality, which you didn't love, but you just accepted, isn't going up. It's just staying where it is, which is not your favorite. So what you like is going to go down over time, and everything else isn't necessarily going on up. It's not necessarily a smart combination, but I can't convince somebody against their preferences. And if people have very, very boxy preferences about looks, all I do is explain how it works and I let them make their decision and I don't make a judgment on it.
Right. It's so important. Let's do rapid fire because there's so many questions coming in and I want to try to get to a few more before we bring Lori back on to end this this conversation. Can reference calls dictate deal breakers without any dates?
It's so interesting. Reference calls are a challenging subject because we need to know if the references are reliable and we don't always know that. And sometimes I've gotten really bad information and I've had people have to like fire their references and take them off because they did not give positive feedback about the person they were supposed to support. They didn't see the good in the person that was asking them to share on their behalf. So references can dictate deal breakers, but it's problematic.
With a grain of salt. What if you still are unsure after more than 5 dates? You're still not repulsed, but you're not completely attracted. You have a good time together, but you don't have a feeling either way, and 5 dates have gone by. What do you do?
Definitely, I would say you need a claritologist. I would also say that you should continue to go out. If the other person isn't dumping you and they're going to say yes to another date, say yes to another date, gather more data. At a certain point, it's going to weigh out on one way or the other. So it's either going to go heavy on the side of the good and you're going to start to be more connected and attracted, or it's going to go heavy on the side of like, oh, I'm not only just neutral, but I'm not feeling it. It will eventually, you know, like an egg on the top of a pointed roof. It's not going to just sit there balanced perfectly. It's going to roll one way or the other. And as long as the other person is willing to go out, I would keep going out and making a strong effort, like going out as if this is a good person for me, trying to build the rapport and make it happen. If it doesn't happen, it doesn't happen. If it does happen, you tried your best and you were able to shift it.
Yeah. Here's a good one that just came in. Reading various resumes and profiles, it seems to me that we're looking for a partner to entertain us rather than doing it ourselves.
I like that. And I think we should entertain ourselves.
Absolutely.
We should be entertained by our partners.
Absolutely. Is your too picky really helpful when people say you're too picky?
I'll be like, oh, I'm sorry. You picked your person like out of the hat and you were just like, oh, sure. Yes. Unless you were in an arranged marriage.
What do you mean? They both have a nose.
Yeah, you also chose your person. Listen, yeah. I tell people like this. We have a nose. If we're drinking milk and we smell it and it smells spoiled, are we going to choose it? No, don't drink it. It's not for you. Okay. We have eyes. We have ears. We have experiences. We add all those things up. And if it's not for you, it's not for you.
Yeah.
You can blame me. You can just tell them, Lisa said.
What happens if a fear is loss of freedom? How do you deal with that and get married?
You are definitely going to lose your freedom. That is just a reality. You're going to lose the freedom that you currently have. Wait, I have it here. Oh, hold on.
Darn I'm
so glad. No, I got it right here. Read this book, Shel Silverstein, The Missing Piece. Okay. Yeah. I am going to give you the summary of this book. It is this lovely circle looking for its piece. What is the shape of the piece? Exactly like this, the one that's missing. What happens in the story? Tries lots of different pieces, goes on lots of different dates. What happens? Too big, too small, too sharp, doesn't work. Finally, what happens? And it sings its song. Wait, the song goes like this. I'm looking for my missing piece. I'm looking for my missing piece. Heidi ho, here we go. I'm looking for my missing piece. Okay, finally, what happens? Yay, la, it finds the piece. It's so happy. It starts rolling and moving and grooving and going through the world. And all of a sudden it has this like aha moment. Oh my gosh. I can't do the things I always did. I can't do the things in the same way that I always did. It's different. I'm going to lose my freedom. I can't stop where I want. I can't go where I want. I can't even talk right. You know, that's its mouth, right? And there's something stuck in its mouth. And then, you know what it does? It puts the piece down. I cry when I read this book. My kids are like, Emo, what's wrong with you? Okay. It puts the piece down and it gently rolls away. And you know what it does as it rolls away? It sings the song that it always sang. Oh, I'm looking for my missing piece. No, you're not. You're not looking for your missing piece. You're just not. You found your missing piece. You didn't like what happens when two people come together, which is your world changes. There's a completeness that brings that circle from being open to being fulfilled. And it has to operate in the world in a different way than it ever did before. And it cannot sing the same song and it cannot do the same thing. It has to be done in a different way with that other partner. And sometimes you get what you want and sometimes they get what they want and sometimes you get what you want together and sometimes neither of you get what you want. And it happens that way. And if you can't accept that reality, then Rabbi, the ceremony that Dr. Phil does, you know, we should just stick to ourselves. I've had people say, I don't really want to deal with the complications of it. I'd rather just do my own thing. And I said, you should. If it doesn't work for you to bring a partner in your life, you should enjoy your life. Be a happy, healthy, productive human and do what you need to do. When you're ready for a partner, bring them in. If you're not ready, go do what you need to do. Yes. No judgment. I'm not saying that out of like, I mean that. Other people will say it that way. I mean it. You need to be a happy, healthy human. Then you need to bring another happy, healthy human into your life and build that life together.
That's beautiful. There's so many other questions that have come in. If we didn't answer your question, email us. We'll answer it. Either
go to matchmaker.org. And you can find our podcast. You can email us the questions. That's how we decide on our next webinars and sponsorship. Somebody asked about sponsorship, Rabbi. So I don't know if you want to address that at all.
Yeah, absolutely. You can sponsor one of the next ones. We don't have another one scheduled because no one sponsored it. It's 360 to sponsor one. That simple. And we love to have it. Again, absolutely. With that, we bring you the Venerable Lori Young to close today's session.
Hello, that was amazing. Everybody who thinks it was amazing, just put up your hand or hit the hand button. Tell me if you think it was amazing. I see some hands, okay. I learned so much and I'm sure all the singles who joined today did too. I put it in the chat box, matchmaker.org, where they can find you. And I just wanna say thank you from the bottom of my heart for sharing your time with everybody today. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Lori, for hosting. Thank you, Rabbi, for joining us. And thank you to Solyu at Sinai, also a sponsor. And as always, thank you to everybody who's attending. We always leave with a blessing. So we leave you with a blessing. May you, each and every one of you, find that person that fills your missing piece. May you hold on to them. May they hold on back to you. And may this process be one of ease and where you both have clarity.
Amen.
And if I can also add, it's Aliza's birthday. So a very happy birthday to Aliza. And thank you for taking time out of your birthday to spend this day with us.
Thank you. All right.